Welcome to episode 187 of the Men Who Save Football, the Dundalk FC Fancast. This is a post-match reaction to a game that was more entertaining than perhaps we wanted it to be on Friday night. A 2-2 draw with what was then a top-of-the-table clash with Bray Wanderers. We're going to get another top-of-the-table clash next week. It seems that every week we have top-of-the-table clashes. Guys, was that game far more edge of your seat than really you wanted it to be? And how do you feel given that, we ranged in the roller coaster ride that was that 90 minutes. We seemed to be primed for disappointment, and then ultimately, I suppose, lucky to get a point.
Well, I think the probably most decisive sort of aspect of the game is how hard Dundalk had to work for their goals versus how hard Bray had to work for theirs. I think if you take the volume of the game that was spent in the, final third of the field for Dundalk and the final third of the field for Bray, like I'd say we had, maybe 60% of the game spent in their final third, and Bray maybe, around 10 or 12% or something like this in the Dundalk final third, and yet same number of goals for each team, right? It really felt like at the start of the game we started very well. We pressed them back, I think created a bunch of chances. I'm sure we will talk about the Sean Keogh penalty, incident at some stage, but we got a goal through Mikael, really good strike, got in the lead, and then it seemed like we just coughed up the easiest possible goal for Bray. Give them a cheap free kick, chance to swing the ball into the box. I think defender on the Bray side really standing still, jumping for the ball, nods into the net, basically unchallenged, and it's 1-1. And then I think we spend like most of the second half camped in the Bray half at least. They go down to 10 men. I think we're piling on all the pressure, give away another cheap free kick, and all of a sudden it's in the back of the net again, and we're staring down in defeat all of a sudden. Then, but for a Ruby's header. And in the last few minutes, that's how it would have finished. And it just feels like the opposition have devised this template where they, sit really deep. We fail to break them down, or at least, make very hard work of it. And they hit us on the counter, and we cough up something fairly cheap. That's been the template for the past, sort of four or five games. And sadly, it seems to be working.
Yeah, I think that's a really great way of framing it, which is the amount of workload we had to put into our goals versus the workload into their goals. It was a mad, mad, mad game. I mean, the start of it was, I thought Dundalk were all over them. When we first got that goal, I thought, right, this is it. We are going to win this game. Because we're at home, we're on top, we score early for once. We got an early lead. We are definitely the dominant team, and I thought because I suppose leading into the game is the narrative of Dundalk slightly spluttering, Bray and Cove sort of ascendant behind us. That big gap had just got chiseled down and down and down and down, and we had marked out this game as being sort of a statement game. So going into it, then I thought the first 25 minutes we had made the statement, which was much more dominant. A whole bunch of chances, 1-0 up, looking good for it. And the goal that we gave away just completely torpedoed any narrative. Because I thought this was it. Dundalk, but I think Kilduff had clearly got the team and said, this game is the game that we put ourselves back on track. Because the two teams hovering below you, they're the team you have to beat. I mean, you can draw away to other clubs, bring it back home, and maintain that lead. But that dominant lead we'd had, chipped away, chipped away, chipped away, chipped away. And Friday night was the night to do it. First 20 minutes is like, it is on. But that goal just should have been dealt with. I just thought it was actually conjured up out of nothing. And then I thought, any script that had been written was absolutely torn up. I thought that it was then from that point on crazy. And again, I thought, we were the better side in the second half. It kind of ebbed and flowed a bit more from that point on. I think up until that first half hour, it was all Dundalk. Once that goal just seemed to manifest out of nowhere, it was then game on for Bray. Second half, I would say we were the better side. Then they go down to 10 men, and you think, this has to be on. And then again, the second their second goal, I have to say, great, you know, shot and then the follow-up. So I think their goal was kind of, it's one of those goals you say, right, fine, you give it to them. But we should have been comfortably ahead at that stage. So that could have been a goal that you give away and you accept when it's 3-1. But I think for them to get that, when we had huffed and puffed and not gotten goals, because we can talk about how easily we gave away goals, but I still think the story of this Dundalk side is us not scoring. I mean, we should have been comfortably ahead in that game. In some games, you win 3-2, okay? And some games, you say, right, we let in a few goals, but we scored more than them. You get the 3 points. That second Bray goal, I could kind of forgive had we capitalized on the fact that I thought we were at home, we were better, and they were down to 10 men. We should have been comfortably ahead. They magic up this goal. And then it's one of these games of strange emotions, because you definitely leap out of your seat and you're joyous at the Arubi goal, but it feels like that was just, we clawed back a point. Now, one thing I would say, what's more important than our point is the fact that we held Bray, we denied them 2 points. So really, really mixed emotions, but you'd have to say not great overall.
Definitely made a mixed emotions, right, Rory? The second goal, yeah, you forgive that if you're 4-1 up, but when you're 1-1 and you give away a cheap free kick, that's the first thing. Okay, it's a really cheap free kick, and you don't defend it. You know, if it goes straight in, there's no defending that, but it comes back up the crossbar, you defend it. It's like you take a penalty and all your defenders stand outside the box and just hope that it gets saved or goes into the back and that nobody runs in it. So that's what really annoyed me about that goal. We're 1-1. I turned around to Colin Murphy and I turned around to Colin and I said, they're going to score. This was about 10 minutes for it. They're going to score and we're not. I said, they're going to score and it's writing us all over us. We're huffing and we're puffing. We're like a butter knife. We're not very sharp. We've got loads of possession. And we just can't do anything with it. Very, very frustrating to watch. I think that is the narrative, though, Rory. Remember, you're saying like it goes against. And I think that is the narrative. The narrative is this Dundalk team are better than any other team in the league when it comes to possession football. But we are beatable and we are weak at the back. Not because we're weak in terms of defending. We're weak because we switch off. I think that we spend so much time in the other half, we spend so much time pressing that when the attack comes, we're not ready for it. And that's forgivable in itself, because this is the first time this team has been put together. Very, very, listen to Kieran Kilduff's very honest interview post-match. And I have to agree with everything that he said. Very, very young players. They are so young. Like they are like, this is their first outing into professional football at this level. And we are top of the league. So that's why it's a night of emotions, because you are so frustrated with the fact, and frustration is, Kieran Kilduff says over and over, gets frustrated in the dressing room, see it, frustration stands, frustration after the game. And that's what it is. We expect this team to be top of the league because we're unbeaten, but we are playing incredible football in terms of possession and we can't score. That's a major frustration point. And then we get hit on the break, or we're soft on a set piece, and it's nearly almost inevitable, but at the same time unforgivable, but yet again forgivable from where we are in terms of the league. I think that, you know, we build so much pressure going forward that we just lack that little bit of tenacity in the defense to deal with it when it's coming at us. Then we switch off or what we do. But going back to the penalty kick, I actually forgot all about the penalty, Martin, when you were talking about earlier on, because, you know, so much had happened during the game. And it's not one of those games where you kind of go, well, we should have got the penalty, you know, it would have changed the game. I don't know whether it would have changed the game. We had the role reversals this week. I was in the stand, so I wasn't quite as close as you guys were. You were over the other side. It was straight in front of you. So I didn't get a proper look at it. It looked like a penalty. And from where I was sitting, I'm up top of the stand. But what was really interesting was that he goes down in the box, and it's a blatant push in the back. And then it's a passage of play, I think maybe two passages after that, then into the Dundalk half, and it's a gentle push in the back of a Bray player, and it's a free kick. I have no idea how that is a free kick. and we don't get a penalty. So I just thought it was a bizarre, even though I thought the referee had a half decent game, I just thought that was such a bizarre decision. I don't think it was a swinger in terms of the game. I think that we need to see these games out. We need to work on that, that you know, I don't know whether it's taking more shots outside the box, whether, you know, a lot of playing tippy-tappy, as I call it, outside and around the box. Even though our first goal was an absolute banger, it was an incredible strike, really, really clean hit. I just think that we need more of that. I think we need more shots on goal. And possibly, maybe we can talk about this, Martin, you're the tactician. Rather than the press, maybe the hold, in terms of like holding up the game, not playing across the back like we did last year, but the hold where we put pressure on, and if we score, we hold. We hold and then we let them come at us. Because I think we are the best side in the league. We just can't score. And it's an awful frustrating situation to be in.
Yeah, it was really a curious one. You sort of felt the full range of emotions. If we just look at the statistics, we were dominant statistically in the game, but of course that counts for very little apart from the goals. But we did have 73% of the possession over the course of the game. We had almost twice as many shots. We had 13 shots compared to Braes 7. It's just we seem to be way less efficient than they were in converting those into goals. As Martin says, we had to work very, very hard for our goals. They didn't seem to have to work at all for theirs. When it came to passes, we had 622 completed passes against their 234. And that, I think, tells you a lot about who was on top. Now, it should be mentioned that for all that statistical dominance, Dundalk did have actually some crucial players missing. We were without Dervin and we were out Groom, both of whom have been important for us. And we also had to deal with Kyo in a new position. Now, again, Kyo, I think we've praised him a lot. And we found him playing sort of as more or less an advanced to left-sided attacker on a kind of forward three. And that was a kind of really novel position for him to be in. But he proved, we've seen him before, he has been a real attacking threat from the left-back position. He proved very able at that. We did create three very good chances in the first 5 minutes. We'd had to wait a little bit longer for the goal to actually come. It was McHale charging forward from that left-back position, combining with Kyo, that created the chance, which he finished with aplomb, really threaded it through a very crowded box, great strike. At that point, you think you're going to push on and maybe get the cushion, but it just didn't happen. We had, you could draw lots of analogies, but for all our dominance, it was a little bit like Arsenal's opening 20 minutes against Paris Saint-Germain. We did pretty much everything right. We created chances, but just failed to convert them. Now, when you look back at our recent form, that's kind of been the story. We now have only one win from the last five. Now, we're still on top of the table, which just goes to show kind of what a league it is. Cove now, who we play next, have got a run of five wins in the last five. So they really are the form team. I think they've got the league's top scorer right now. So this is really going to be an interesting test of whether Dundalk managed to shake off this sort of fugue that they're in right now and get back to winning ways, or whether or not this league might end up being a lot closer than, first of all, we thought it might be.
Yeah, like I say, I'm sort of a little concerned that this Dundalk team have just been worked out a little bit. So I think every team and every league, right, it's never as simple as there being like one outstanding team that, you know, sort of from start to finish, you know, wins everything. I think it's always sort of an arms race, right? People working out each other's styles and tactics and stuff like that, and coming up with new approaches to try and, you know, sort of stifle people and, you know, get at other teams and things like this. And so I think this Dundalk team is just in a phase at the moment where what has worked really well for the first 9 or 10 games of the season has just stopped being so effective because teams are playing this, you know, really low block. And I can sort of tolerate, you know, draws with Bray, who are a pretty good side in this kind of thing. But like failing to beat Athlone, like, who, let's be honest, are a pretty poor side. And Finn Harps as well, who are on a bad run. You know, those are games that I think we should be winning. And if we'd won both of those, I think we'd be several points further down the road and wouldn't be sitting here having this, you know, slightly worried conversation. I think Dundalk have got to try and find some adjustments, right, to what they've been doing. But I think there are other things that are really positive about it. You know, as you say, like 73% possession, despite missing our two first-choice midfielders, you know, in the centre. I thought Keith Ward and Shane Tracy beside him had an excellent game, especially Keith Ward, right? He was all over the place. He played I think 85 or 86 minutes and stuff like that. And he really dominated, you know, that area of the field. I thought it was great. But it reminded me overall a little bit of watching Stephen O'Donnell's Dundalk in some respects, right? Loads of pressure, you know, loads of possession and this kind of thing, but a failure to really, in particular, work the goalkeeper. And you mentioned that we had more shots than Bray did, but how many of those were actually on target? You know, I struggle to remember any of them. Weirdly, the highlights reel left out the Andy Parashev shot, which I thought was one of the highlights of the game, right? I thought everybody in the ground thought that that was nestling in the top corner and everybody was off their feet. But sadly, it went wide of the post. But we had Daryl Horgan shoot wide. We had Keith Ward sort of float a free kick wide as well at the same time. And it felt like for all of the chances we had, and even when we started, you know, taking some shots from distance, they were all off target. And that really has been a feature, I think, of the last few games, right? We are not working the opposition goalkeeper. It's not as if the, you know, the opposition goalkeeper is having a man of the match performance and, you know, keeping us at bay with save after save or something like this, right? Largely, the opposition goalkeeper is untroubled. We still might manage a goal or two a game, you know, but I think aside from that, the opposition goalkeeper might not be touching the ball except for, you know, goal kicks and this kind of thing. And I think we have to find some way to change that dynamic a little bit. And I talked about this a little bit last time, right? You can play the sort of Barcelona style way where you try to like unpick your way through the middle, or you can play like the Alex Ferguson, you know, type of way where you, you know, launch balls, you know, from crosses, you know, wide into the box and just get numbers in there. But, you know, you have to put that kind of pressure on the opposition in order to, like I say, be able to work the goalkeeper like that and make chances. And right now we're just stifled and it's not happening. So I think some kind of changes are needed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, I think it's the, for all the easy goals we give away, let's say the story of this team is the lack of, putting the ball into the net, given our dominance in all of our aspects, using like possession, passing, and watching the game. We're a much more fluid side. It's been a joy to watch us, but it's just the end product is, and that's what makes it more frustrating more than anything. And I would have said as well, Keith Ward, I thought, was excellent. And given that last week we were talking about our favourite 11, and I think most of us had Wardy kind of, you know, he's been doing good for us, but put him on the... I think he totally shamed us because I thought he was excellent. And I would have him starting. On a performance like that, I would have him one of my starters now. And I said last week that I thought I was really impressed with Wardy this season, but I was sidelining him. I thought he was excellent and he was really, really creative and really, really up for it. Interesting, you know, Kenny played till half time and then Ebby came in. I thought Ebby's header should have done better. I think that was a chance which was really, really sitting there waiting for us. And as Martin said, we're not troubling keepers. I thought Ebby's header to the keeper was just really, I think he had much better. He had the entire goal in front of him. For that chance. So, you know, there's big debates about Kenny, Ebby, you know, I think, you know, Gaxa, Horgan all had chances and we're just not clinical. I think we're doing everything so right. And definitely I agree as well. It's the Finn Harps and at loan games. When we look back on these sequence of games, I definitely think you could forgive a draw with Bray. I mean, I was saying it was a statement when I think we really could have put down a marker then. But listen, a draw against your closest rivals, yep. But those other games in the sequence, you know, especially the drawn games, especially because it's all fine margins. It's, you know, nil-nils, one-alls, things like that, two-twos. One goal in each of those games, and we are 9 points more, you know, we're 6 points ahead of where we are. So one goal in each of those games, and we are in a completely different position. So it just feels like we are doing everything so right. It's great to watch. But there is just that little bit at the end. And he said, we're not challenging the keeper enough. In fact, in recent games, I would say Cherry has been challenged more. Cherry has pulled out some fucking wonderful saves. And he's the keeper who has been challenged more and has put in sterling results. And I think he's done really, really well. It should be their keeper who is pulling out the saves that Cherry's doing. So... It's a bit of a knife edge.
Yeah, there was me putting Cherry on the bench last week when we were talking about the our first 11, and I thought he was completely unbelievable last night. He was great. for the free kick, and he was great even though they scored then. He was brilliant for the, there was another passage of play, and he was an incredible save. But he had very little to do as well, which is, you know, when you have very little to do, you can kind of get caught, I think. But he just goes to show his professionality and his he's probably possibly getting sharper as it goes on. But saying that, he hasn't got very much to do, which goes back to the point that we actually are defending quite well in the passages of play. It's whatever happens when we just seem to switch off, or, you know, we just kind of lose concentration or get frustrated in our play. I don't know. But I just can't add much more to it than that. Only that, you, like, you're dead right. The games, you know, the Athlone games, they're the ones you have to be taking, you know, the three points from. And like last night, which is pretty, when we've seen how we played Bray, during the first phase of Kims, like you were saying, oh, that's their relegation fodder. Like, you know, they're bottom of the table stuff. Like, you know, we're after absolutely annihilating them. We're much, much better than them. And then you see the Bray that has come to Oriel Park last night. And I think it's the same kind of narrative. The teams have figured out there's a way. And I think Kieran Gilduff kind of alluded to this in his post-match interview, that, you know, there's opposition teams are coming and they're sitting in and they're trying to hit us on the break. They're happy enough to be one down, you know, and they're happy enough to take the pressure and try and hit us on the break. And that's absolutely perfect. We just need to be that little bit sharper. Like the first 5 minutes, we were really, really dominant. You know, first 10 minutes, really, really dominant. That's where you need to be making your impact. You need to be scoring there. You need to be taking your one or two goal lead in the first 15, 20 minutes. And then you can sit back and you can be a little bit more relaxed and even switch off every now and again.
Yeah, it's kind of like we were at the start of the season. I may contest just one claim that both you and Rory made there. But just to go through the main incidents in the game, we talked a little bit about McHale's goal, which gave us the platform from which we didn't really kick on. The Killian Cantwell goal is very rudimentary. It's just free kick wide. He isn't marked tightly enough. He, you know, dominates the air. He just gets a header on target and it's in. It comes from nothing. It's sort of totally, there's no pattern of play before indicating Dundalk are under pressure or Bray are building momentum. And it's the type of goal that we've kind of conceded a lot of recently. Just a little bit of sloppiness at the back, misplaced back passes and so on that have kind of cost us. Now, that being said, we still have the best defence in this division, regardless of who's in it. We've conceded fewer goals than anybody else, but it's just those goals, when we do concede them, they do tend to be coughed up a little bit too easily. Killian Cantwell then went on to become sort of the pantomime villain of the evening. Not only did he get the goal, he was the one who cleared Ebe's header that you mentioned, Rory, off the line. And there's a question of whether he should have played much of a role in the game. We can come back to it. Was he does seem to commit a fairly dirty tackle on McHale, which put him out of the game at one point, and then kind of has a goading reaction to the crowd, which I thought left a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth when you've just injured a player and he has to leave the field to play, to be kind of whooping it up as if you've just scored a goal or something. So very much the villain of the piece. It did add a sort of edge to the proceedings as we went on. The free kick that Bray score from, I have to say, looking back on it, and I think Martin said this at the time, the free kick is well placed. It's over the wall and it is tucking in under the bar, but there isn't a great deal of pace in it. And I think Cherry perhaps could have done a little bit better there. He diverts it onto the bar, and then, as we know, the rebound is kind of snapped up. Maybe his defence could have helped him out a little bit more by being more attentive, but that looked like a shot that could have been just tapped over rather than tapped onto the bar. Now, I don't want to be too hard on Cherry because he's been asked to play a lot more than he probably expected to be, and he hasn't really been a regular for a while. But I thought in that moment he perhaps could have done better. The game then concluded, as we know, with a series of Dundalk corners and the injury time header from Ruby that kind of showed us that when quality balls were delivered into the box, that, you know, this Bray defence was beatable. Unfortunately, in the series of corner kicks that we had, and we had plenty of them, we often overhit them or underhit them. Good delivery resulted in a goal. So, you know, a lot to kind of think about as regards where we are, whether or not this plateauing of form is going to continue, or whether something is going to happen to to turn it around. Now, there was, Martin has already suggested, you know, what needs to be done, what changes need to be made. And Kieran Kilduff seems to think that, you know, some sort of evolution of the way we approach the game is necessary. There was some rumours during the week of a possible loan return of Ryan O'Kane. There was wild rumours of a loan return of Patrick Hoban, who seems to be out of favour at Derry. I think that one might be fanciful. Could be great. It's a great rumour. It could be a great prospect. But what do you think? Do you think the answers to our problems are within the current squad, or should we be thinking of maybe a mid-season window where we can get something that we're missing right now? Do you think the answer is in some of those former players returning, or do we need to look further to somebody we haven't seen in Oriel Park before?
Well, one answer I'll give to that, and this might come across as instant, you know, recency bias, reactionism, but Benny Arubi might have a claim to start a game. Our forwards or our forward line are not doing it. And not to call out players here, but if you think about Ebby's header and then you think about Arubi's header, Arubi got the job done and was the hero of the match. I think someone said he's come on, he's made 10 appearances and now he's got his goal. If things need to be shaken up, and let's say Kenny, Ebby and stuff like this, there's, the goals aren't coming as we would like, is there an argument to be made to give a young Arubi a chance? And that's one possible answer there. Before we get on to wild speculation about players returning, I would say that's, and I'd be really interested to hear the rest of your thoughts on that. Is Arubi made a claim to get a start? Because I think some of the other players jostling for those positions may be fluffing their lines. And he had, I mean, he was the hero. He clawed back a point and stole two off a rival. So that's one potential, that we have options on the bench to start that we haven't seen. Maybe give him more of a run of games and see what comes out of him.
Well, I think Kieran Kilduff alluded to that in the post-match. Like, as we've seen last night, Friday night, like he has no problem, you know, trying different things. Like, he starts Kenny and then he takes him, not as effective as he probably would hope to have been. I'm sure Owen would have hoped to be more effective too. So he kind of he hooks him at half time and he puts on Eddie, and then, you know, he puts on Arubi towards the end. But he kind of says in the post-match interview that every time he seems, Arubi seems to have got a bad kind of look. I think he was going to start a couple of the games, but he kind of pulled up with injury and stuff like that. So maybe he's next to start. Like, if he's injury free and he has no niggles, maybe we'll see him up front. You wouldn't be the first person to say that, Rory. My brother actually said it. Going back a good bit now, a couple of games into the season at home. He said, yeah, he said, give that young chap a start up front. He seems to have lots of strength, lots of life. And then he goes to prove that, on Friday night, that he has the finishing credentials as well. Maybe a little bit of hunger, but it's great to have three strikers like that in the squad. You know, because that's the job of them, isn't it? Like, I mean, if you've got two players who just don't seem to be like sparking and they can't get, then you have somebody else to come in there and lift the game of the other two, or hopefully make goals flow easier. So when the other two kind of come back in, or, you know, come on at whatever stage, you know, that they might get on the score sheet as well. So yeah, I'd be all up for that. Never heard about any of the wild speculation. Heard the Ryan O'Kane rumor during the week. Pat Hoban one, I didn't hear that at all, and I'd say that's mad wild speculation altogether.
I mean, I have no doubt that both of those players would add to the strength of the Dundalk squad, but I do wonder if it's in an area that we really need strengthening too much. So certainly out wide, we've got like lots of people who've just been mentioned, like Arubi himself, but, you know, Daryl Horgan, we've got Kenny, like various other people who can sort of occupy that wide spot. And there's quite a lot of competition for places there already. I'm not sure that Ryan O'Kane would be adding in an area that we really need a whole lot of strengthening at the moment. Pat Hoban, I mean, his record is unparalleled, you know, but we've also seen him play in Dundalk teams that have passed a lot around outside the box and failed to get shots in either. And so, I don't know, I think, you know, probably I think what we need is more of a minor tactical adjustment as opposed to, you know, more players to solve this problem. And at the same time, there are areas of the squad where it looks a little bit threadbare. I mean, we're playing Shane Tracy and people like that in the middle of the field, and he's done a fine job, I have to say, the other night. Like, definitely part of a midfield that thoroughly dominated the game. But, you know, when you see people, you know, playing at 16 and 17 years old and being asked to, you know, sort of fill those, you know, positions, you sort of wonder to yourself, well, you know, if he gets injured, who are we bringing off the bench, you know, to try and fill this gap? And so I think a striker and another, you know, sort of wing forward wouldn't exactly be the kind of areas that I think we need to most strengthen at the moment.
And just on the Mikhail injury, I mean, we were quite close to that challenge. Did you think it was a nasty challenge?
I'd say we were almost too close to it, right? So it was actually hard to see what was happening at, you know, foot level at that stage, thanks to the angle that we're at in the shed. For me, it seemed like there was an arm to the face, right? I thought Cantwell had caught him with an elbow or something like that. And I think the funny thing was, I think Mikhail was almost a little bit too honest, right? He tried to stay in his feet and play the ball instead of just going straight down. And I don't know, like, I would need to see it back, the incident itself, to see if it was more visible on the camera. But certainly, I thought there was some foul play involved, right, one way or the other.
I'd need to see that back, because I was trying to rack my brains there to find out which incident that was. Actually, looks like Mikhail, like, I kicks out at him, like, when I'm stand side. When we're stand side, I turned around to Colm and said, what's with the kick out there? It actually looks like he kicks out at him and then goes down from the kick out, from kicking out at him. That's what I got from the other side. So maybe if we're not hearing too much about it, it's because there's two completely different views of what actually happened. We're too far away to see what actually happened. I don't know. We're too far away to see the afters of it as well, Ken. So I couldn't really, you know, say whether it was a bad one or not, because it looked completely different from where I was.
Well, not to turn it into the Zapruder film, but yeah, if we were too close and you guys were too distant, another barometer was the reaction of the players, and the players were very irate at the challenge that went in on Mikhail. We know Mikhail has had injury troubles. He's been missing from the squad occasionally. And I think any time a player makes a challenge, as Martin said, I thought an elbow was thrown. Didn't think it, saw it very much in front of me. For the referee to kind of be so dismissive of it, not really have a look, not, well, the linesman was unfortunately on the other side of the pitch, but he did have one on that line as well. He just seemed totally dismissive of what looked like a fairly ugly challenge. And the fact that the player then could not take any further part in the game, I think, was telling. But the most telling thing of all, I think, was the reaction of the Dundalk players, who were actually really livid with Cantwell. Now, it did sort of raise the temperature on the game, and it did make it more of an edgy contest thereafter. But you've mentioned the threadbare element of the squad. Like, we will see probably, I don't know if Mikhail is going to be returning next week or whether or not he'll be now laying off for a few weeks due to that injury. We could see then Keogh revert to his usual position of left back, and we'd be going with Leonard and Maioa at centre half. And that could see, you know, some of the characters who were missing from the starting lineup then return to the we could see Horgan come back out to the left wing and somebody else come back into midfield. So there will likely be adjustments on the course of that. But yeah, I think, you know, it was a challenge that would concern me. And you know, even if it did raise the temperature of the game, I think the players had a very clear view that that was a dangerous challenge, and I think they really took it to heart. Now, fortunately, they used that in the correct way, and most of them kind of kicked on then, and, you know, used that energy to try and go and win the game. Of course, we nearly got stung with the loss. But as it turned out, I suppose a draw was probably a fair enough result. And, you know, we just have to use whatever. There should be a morale boost from that injury time equaliser, because we have maintained our unbeaten record. We did maintain our position at top of the table. So if the team consider this a warning shot of what happens when we're not efficient enough, when we're not taking the chances that we create, and they bring that determination to maybe put some of those flaws in their game right against Cove, I think that will hopefully be the platform to maybe go and get what will be an important win on Friday night down there.
Yeah, definitely. I will say one thing, though, about the... I didn't really address the speculation about incoming players. I know Martin said, you know, maybe other parts of the field need addressing, but I think lack of goals is our primary issue. I would never give an atom of thought to this, that it could be a possibility. But if Patrick Hoban was an option. And Martin correctly pointed out that Hoban, you know, literally our greatest ever striker, and you know, the stats are there to prove it. Has also stuttered in a Dundalk side where, you know, it wasn't set up around him, and that was part of the maybe the controversy, that a side wasn't set up around him. But if he is struggling with Derry and he was open to it, could you turn down the greatest striker in our history in the first division, where you could entertain the idea that maybe it would be like bringing in, like, you know, the Death Star into the situation and could obliterate defences? Oh my God. Now, there is the whole aspect of the financial side of this thing, that we can sit here and play fantasy football and say, what a dream to have Patrick Hoban come in. But could in any way, we have to be realistic that the club is, you know, was hovering on the edge of total annihilation. Could we in any way finance, would it be responsible to finance a player like Patrick Hoban coming in? Because to me, it just, you know, it starts giving you goosebumps, the idea that Patrick Hoban might come in and to consider what he might do. Maybe that's the thing that could unlock everything. You put a player like him, given our passing football, given what's going on around and the kind of football we've seen, maybe now we would begin to start seeing balls being smashed into the net. But would it be responsible club-wise to bring in Patrick Hoban, coming from Derry, where I'm sure he is doing fine for himself? Could we in any way, I mean, the more I think about this, the more of a fantasy this is, because I think other clubs could, if he is an option to go somewhere, maybe even on loan this summer, I'm sure there are Premier Division clubs that could outbid us on that one, wages-wise. Galway, as has been suggested there, which would be kind of, you know, maybe, you know, emotionally for him, an obvious option, hometown, and clearly could outgun us financially. But if it were a possibility, could we justify it, given that we're, you know, I would say week to week, always in a precarious position? But it would be amazing.
Imagine though that if you're Derry and you're to loan him out, that's, I suppose, I might said, like, it was pie in the sky there a minute ago, but now I'm off listening to you, Rory, but you're such a emotional, you know, kind of response to that question, thinking, maybe. But think about it, I suppose, like, would you want to loan Patrick Hoban out to any other team that's around you in the Premier Division? Like, anybody can win that from the relegation zone at the moment, from the relegation zone, apart from Sligo and Cork, anybody can win that league. That's incredible. So unless you're going to loan him to Sligo or Cork, I think that, you know, if he is on the loan market, I think it'll definitely be maybe a move outside of the contenders for the league. So, Rory, I like the way you're thinking.
Yeah, I have to say, I think it's pure fantasy. I would be surprised even if he's kind of moved out of Derry. Now, I don't know if the new manager fancies him or what the story is, or whether he hasn't been featuring all that much due to injury or loss of form. But I don't think we're going to see him back in Dundalk jersey, because I think, you know, he's still a Premier Division player on Premier Division wages, and we just aren't shopping in that market right now. Like you say, it could be like bringing the Death Star back for one last kind of go. It could just give us the goals that would let us just take off. But I have to say, you know, Dean Ebby is a proper centre forward. He kind of does have a lot of the qualities that we need. Now, he didn't start the other night. I don't know whether that was a form thing or an injury thing. He has played a lot of football for us. I thought when he came on, he did okay. That header that was cleared off the line, obviously, if he puts a little bit more behind that, maybe, you know, that's the crucial goal that gets us across the line. But he has scored 6 in a division where the top scorer is 9. So, you know, I think he is doing okay. Unfortunately, maybe those around him, like, we've seen Owen Kenny work incredibly hard. He has certainly put in no end of effort. Nobody can accuse him of not putting in the yards. But scoring goals has not come to him like you would maybe wish to see a centre forward or somebody who's aspiring to a centre forward position scores regularly, or a little bit more regularly than he does. And this is kind of why I would be also hesitant about the return of Ryan O'Kane. We have players like Ryan O'Kane in abundance, the positions he can play in. We've got two or three options in those already. Ryan was, you know, a very popular and promising player in lots of ways, but he was never a prolific goal scorer or creator of assists. So I don't think he solves a problem that we have right now. Now, I think if there is to be additions to the squad, and who knows whether or not we have the financial firepower to make that happen, I think it probably does have to be a number 10 or a number 9, somebody who can either create unlock defenses, like beat that sort of low block defense that we've seen ranged against us for quite some time. But when you look at the way that Keith Ward and Daryl Horgan played, they were trying to do that. They were creating these passing triangles over and back. We were moving the ball from left to right. We were doing quite a lot of things. Now, either you get Dean Ebby returning to form, maybe a little bit more quality delivery and a little bit more form, and he kind of takes off and he is that center forward that you're kind of searching for, or somebody that we don't know and isn't on our radar maybe comes in to create competition for that 9 or 10 position. But other than that, I think the team has functioned very well. Like I say, the best defense, we have a midfield that functions very well when everybody was fit, and even in the absences of some key players was pretty good the other night. It just seems that we haven't had the rub of the green lately. We have perhaps become a little bit tactically predictable. So probably it's a case of Kieran Kilduff and the whiteboard and a new way of doing things is really probably what we need, rather than changes in personnel or a return to players who are steeped in nostalgia.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the start of the season, I said something along the lines of the order of business for Dundalk is to try to get out of this division with the minimum possible financial spend at the time. And so I think the idea of bringing in Pat Hoobin and Ryan O'Kane and some of that, like I say, would definitely add firepower to this squad. But do we need that in order to get over the line, right? This club is fighting on two fronts, right? Not just for winning the league, but also for staying alive financially. And I think going a little bit too hastily, right, for one of those goals might compromise the other.
Do you want to turn to Twitter to see what the fans made of the game?
Yes, we shall. So, Dundalk FC snatch an injury time goal to earn a share of points against 10-man Brave Wanderers, who has taken a shock lead minutes just before full time. Was this a game that Lily White should have won, or is it a draw, a good result under the circumstances? So, E. Collins played well, but still missed some gilt-edged opportunities, put the game to bed. For playing well, but goals shy, building opportunities well, but nobody clinical enough up front to finish same. Bill Costas needs striker to come in the transfer window to get us over this. Robbie Morton, entertaining game. We played well and did enough to win it, but glad we got out of jail. Much better than the last few weeks. Thought Tracy had a great game in the middle. Michael Shine, maybe, but we played much the better football. Badly missed Groom and Durbin in midfield. Huge relief to get the equaliser and could have won. Our strikers are the problem, just not scoring regularly. That said, we are only unbeaten team in the entire country and still 3 points clear. Positives. Simon Canning, thought we played well and controlled the game. Missed chances again, come back to bite. Why can't we put inferior opposition away? Bray played like most teams do against us. Very deep, hoping for a set-piece chance. Still unbeaten, but we need to find a formula to score more.
Yeah, so some of the frustrations we've been talking about evident in some of those replies is again. But to be optimistic, we're still where we need to be. We're on top of the table. And hopefully, you know, this plateau that we're in, we can shake it off. We can't say that the games aren't, you know, good sources of motivation. With Cove in significant form right now, Dundalk should go down to Cove under no expectations. We know we've had some tough games down there in the past, but, you know, they should be highly motivated for this because, again, you know, they're facing a top-of-the-table clash whereby a win will be crucial as to whether or not we begin to get back in the direction that we want to be, which is in a comfortable lead at the top of this division, or whether or not this is going to be a contest.
Yeah, well, the opportunities for statement wins keep coming. We talked about Friday being an opportunity to do that, which, you know, sadly we passed up. But I think if we go down to Cove and win that game, and perhaps if for some reason Bray do not win their next game, right, all of a sudden we have a very comfortable lead at the top of the table, right? So I think the opportunity remains there for this team to show what they're made of. And I think we could be sitting back down for our next cast in very different form, right, when the time comes.
Yeah, and hopefully that will be the case. Just before we wrap it up for this episode, though, I think I have the feeling, looking out the window, that we might be the only four people left in the county. It seemed to be a mass exodus to Croke Park today, where Loud did something they haven't done for a generation or probably two, and that was win the Leinster title in a game that was really exciting and, you know, a real kind of spectacle. Did any of you look in on how your native county did?
No, I must say I didn't. Didn't get the opportunity. It was a family day planned from ages ago, and off we went. But I kept an eye on the. My daughter was had friends from school at the game, so obviously we're keeping an eye on the score. Yeah, incredible result, really. And as if you follow GAA, which I don't follow GAA, but I mean it's very hard not to be caught up in the emotion of everybody else, your neighbours and your family. On such a momentous day, it was a real kind of historical one. And I suppose there was a revenge to be sought after the last one in 2010, after the last Leinster Senior Cup final. But they won it on merit, and fair play to them. I've no idea what happens after this. So remember back in the olden days, that was it. They were in the semi-final of the All-Ireland. But nowadays, I don't know, did it go into some type of 16-team league now or something like that with teams from New York and London, I've no idea.
Well, it does change from year to year, but now it's a kind of Champions League format this year. So there'll be plenty more to see. You will have plenty more opportunities to get on the bandwagon if you haven't already. So, you know, fear not. Over the summer at some point, I'll drag you on to Croke Park and we can have a day out. But yeah, congratulations. I suppose there's a fair bit of crossover between Dundalk FC fans and Loud fans. So congratulations if you're a Loud fan. It's been a long time coming and now you have something to celebrate.
Yeah, it was amazing. Interesting. I wouldn't be a GAA fan either, but I found myself stuck to my phone all day long checking the results. And the person I was with was like, why is this important? And it is just that strange thing of, you know, that tribalism that gets you drawn into something even that you mightn't have interest in. But I thought it was incredible. If we're going to get in a little moan here, every time Louth are in a final, Dundalk is red and white. You know, sometimes when Dundalk are in a final, you have to plead for a bit of black and white on the streets. So if I'm going to get in a little dig here, it's that it seems that Dundalk turns red and white and sometimes orange and white, depending on who's in a final. And it just seems that for our own hometown team, it takes a little bit more screaming when we're in big finals. And we're in big finals more than Louth. And I think, you know, fair play to Louth. I genuinely is brilliant. And I think everyone, you know, it's generally a joyous atmosphere, but sometimes I like to see Dundalk a bit more black and white at times.
Hope you're not suggesting, Rory, that the GAA is a little better politically connected than Dundalk FC is. Well, we'll have to see if that continues. But from my perspective, I think any opportunity for the people of Louth to heap a little bit more misery onto the heads of people from Meath is just an opportunity well taken. So congrats to them for that.
Yeah, indeed. We can always find the aggro angle in any scenario we're put to. So, yeah, good to see. Anyway, hopefully Dundalk will have plenty to celebrate come the end of the season as well. And we'll be keeping on going. Our next stop is Cove. It's going to be a big game. And hopefully we'll begin to see an upward turn in our form. Okay, and on that cross-code moment of harmony, we might wrap it up there for this episode. I'd like to thank everybody who contributed on Twitter. I'd like to thank the contributors to the show, Rory Murphy, Damien Kenny, and Martin Mullen. And we'll be back to talk to you after the top-of-the-table clash against Cove Ramblers.